Okay, welcome back. Hour number two. And as we take a look at Ukraine right now, the story seems to be that Russia has pulled out a portion, small portion, of some of its frontline troops, sent them back to their base, or allegedly was doing so. Perfect feint before an invasion, if you ask me. But the idiot president of Ukraine, Zelensky, the former comedian, seems to think that, that's really neat. And yet their demands haven't changed. These people are nuts. They're really nuts. One person who is certainly anything but that is the extraordinary Mitchell Henderson, who is back tonight to bring us up to speed on things as he sees them through his contacts and his wisdom at tracking these geopolitical military events for a long time. Hello, Mitch. Welcome back.
Hello, Jeff, and hello to the audience. Let me just first say that two things are very important in war. One is deception, and one is surprise. You always want to have both of those things. So it puts us in a dilemma, okay, because the deception could be that they're making us think that it's tomorrow that they're going to invade, and we reason that, well, they won't do that. And but then they go ahead and do it anyway. You know, it's it gets very it can be very confusing. But I'm going to get into that because I think tonight could possibly be the last time that there's an opportunity to talk, to have a radio show or anything. I happen to live in a nuclear target. Okay, so, when I do the show, I'm in a nuclear target. Where I actually live, I'm away from one. But,
let's see what we can do about straightening that little dilemma out.
Okay.
We need your wisdom here. You're very important. Your observations and your perspective, we need that. So move if you have to. We don't want you to go up in a puff of ash. No.
Okay. Well, so tonight what I wanted to do is I wanted to give an elegy to a dying nation. Okay, so we're on the brink of war. So I think it's time for an elegy to a dying nation.
Are you a eulogy or an elegy? Doesn't matter.
Elegy.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yes, let me say one thing. There is a little chatter out there, and I think I did mention this to you, that yes, there was going to be a liberation of Ukraine, but it had been rescheduled for fall. I don't know if there's any truth to that. It's just a rumor. But so if this de-escalates, don't think for a moment that it's not going to happen. Timing is everything, as Mitch says. So we'll see. We'll just wait and see. All right, go right ahead, sir.
Okay, so first let me illustrate why we are at this point. Bruce Cannon Gibney is a venture capitalist who helped start Facebook, Spotify, Planeteer Technology, SpaceX, Airbnb, Lyft, and other startups. He wrote a book called A Generation of Sociopaths, How the Baby Boomers Betrayed America. Let me quote this global elitist mindset. Okay, so this is a quote, what he says. He says, have we seen the boomers' engagement with Vietnam faded along with the draft? The boomers' growing emphasis on personal satisfaction proved more enduring. A historical moment then, 1967, is best understood not as the summer of love or a season of protest, but as year one of the self. The defining trait of all previous societies had been that they were social, a body of people more or less united by common goals and values. The individual was subordinated to the group, or as the other great mid-century Spock put it, the needs of the many outweighed the needs of the few, or the one. A social imperative doesn't require socialism itself. His practical instantations, anyway, tend less towards collectivist paradise than military oligarchy. It does, however, require a broader view in which individual liberties balance against general welfare. Unfortunately, unfortunately, sociopaths are antisocial by nature, and their lack of empathy and foresight consigns them to view society only as a restraint on individual freedom of action or a conduit for the unearthed treats rather than a font of general betterment. Now, let me just say first that he's talking about when he made that quote of Spock, he was talking about Dr. Benjamin Spock, a pediatrician who wrote the book on raising babies that the baby boomers' parents followed. Okay, so he's the guy responsible for the way baby boomers are, because his is the book that they all read and used to raise their babies. Okay, and he was a socialist that advocated for abortion and open homosexuality and ran for president as the Communist People's Party candidate for president in 1972. Okay, so this is the guy he's quoting. These are my comments on what he just said, okay? What this Marxist global elitist does not understand is that American society is founded on something different. We were never meant to be collectivist society, nor a society where everyone fits in. Remember that Great Britain sent its religious fanatics and criminals to the colonies. It sent impoverished people that suffered under the class-conscious society where you were expected to obey and conform to the upper classes, which they existed to serve. America was not created to support wealthy globalist venture capitalists and their narrative of the way things ought to be or ought to work. It was created for the poor, lower-class peasants, religious fanatics, and common criminals, so they had a chance to have a life and support their families, even build their fortunes by hard work in the wilderness. It was intended as a society of individuals that could be free to be who they were and think, do, and say whatever they wanted without disapproval or the need of affirmation of others. The Bill of Rights was created to make sure that individuals would be free. Your freedom went only as far as the next guy's freedom began. So freedom is experienced by an individual, not by the group. The group rights inherent in identity politics is a reversion to a class society of rules and obedience. The pedophile Marxist Democratic Party is uninterested in your freedom. They stand for the opposite of freedom. We have to listen to these perverted communists tell us that we are a nation of immigrants. This is a false narrative. My father's family was transported to Jamestown in the 1620s for political crimes in Scotland. They were related to Mary Queen of Scots, and the British government called them domestic terrorists and gave them a choice between swinging at the end of a rope or sentenced to transportation to the colonies. I'm an American because the first boat to leave was going to America instead of Australia or other British colonies. In other words, they sent the trash out of their society here precisely because they did not conform to society or be obedient to the upper classes. Those people rebelled against those who considered them trash, and we had the first anti-colonialist revolution in the world. My ancestors fought that revolution to be free. Here I am a few generations later, living in a nation where everyone wants to obey the upper classes and the royalty of the global elites, where political correctness and the empty and meaningless virtue signaling stand to as a correct behavior, and you are canceled or deplatformed if you do not conform or and obey. Were you to lose your job because you will not obey and take the kill shot? The COVID vaccine, in fact, is a loyalty test, just like King George used to do.
Well, a loyalty test, in other words, excuse me, a loyalty test is an interesting construct. In other words, if you take the bioweapon, you're going to die. So it's a loyalty to the governing geopolitical structure that you agree to kill yourself. Is that the kind of loyalty you meant?
Yeah, It's sort of like Jim Jones and Guyana, okay?
Perfect.
If you are loyal, you're going to drink the cyanide and kill yourself.
Okay? That's right.
Yep. So it's not unprecedented.
Sure.
Nothing's new in the world. People get these ideas.
I just wanted to make sure that everyone understood that. You very well stated.
Yeah. So it was like the masks and the social distancing. Those were loyalty tests. And then the ultimate loyalty test that they can track, okay, because, see, this is the first time in order to get a vaccine, you had to register for it first. No other vaccines you have to. You just go into the doctor and ask for a tetanus shot or a measles shot. You just say, hey, can you give me a measles shot? And they give it to you. And they might give you a little stamp on a piece of paper if you want one, but they don't necessarily do that, okay? That's just for people traveling overseas, your vaccination certificate and stuff that you've had for yellow fever and other diseases. Those countries did not stop requiring those, except for the yellow fever shot. So this COVID test is a loyalty test where they know your name, they know your address, they know who you are. Loyalty test. Okay. So my mother's family was kicked out of the Austro-Hungarian Empire because they refused to be Roman Catholics. Now religion is considered evil and it is suppressed as much as possible. So here I am today, back at the collectivist beginning, a domestic terrorist in my own land because I am white and because I am a Christian. I am the incurable disease that they have deemed all white people to be. Just look at the unarmed rebels of Trudeau's Canada. They are white people demanding their freedom. The heavily armed white people of America have traded their freedom for hedonistic creature comforts. I was a professional soldier, which was the opposite of hedonistic creature comforts. I wanted the freedom. America may cease to exist in a matter of days, weeks, or months. This is not the America that I was born into, and America has become the most evil, immoral, decadent, and violent bully nation on earth. I will not miss her. What is there to miss? The pressure to conform and obey?
Uh-huh.
I spent 28 years defending the Constitution that disappeared in March 2020 with the public health totalitarian police state. No one demands obedience more than the witch doctor. This is not progress. This is a return to barbarism. I fought communism for 28 years, and now I live in a communist country. And most Americans seem to love their communism and despise any scintilla of freedom and individuality.
I think we can kind of cut... We can parse out the people who would generally fit that definition by Gen Z, Gen X, and a good chunk of the millennials. They don't have a clue.
Yes. Although I did meet a millennial today that I was just shocked and appalled that he thinks kind of like we do.
There are some out there, and yes.
Totally unprepared for that. But yes, they are there. When America falls, we need to kick her while she is down and make for ourselves new nations out of the ashes. When she is at her weakest, we must take the opportunity to get our liberty back again. Okay. So let me next address what comes after the fall. Okay, because this is information that people need to know. What comes after is chaos, anarchy, banditry, warlordism, and unchecked crime are what you can reasonably look forward to when the American pedophile Marxist Biden regime falls. So your personal proximate enemy will be criminals. So let's evaluate the situation. I'm going to kind of do this in a military fashion, okay? So the enemy situation. There are at least 2.4 million Americans in criminal gangs that are already well-organized, long-established, and with lots of operational experience. Add to that 2 million people in prison. When the state fails, those prisoners will be running free and on the rampage. Prisons have their own gangs, usually connected to gangs on the outside. Prisoners usually join a gang in prison for protection. They will murder you just for fun and take all you have. These are organized criminals with a hierarchy. There's a criminal reserve army of 19 million convicted felons outside prison, including those on probation and parole. Although, let me say, not everybody convicted of a felony is a bad person. Many just got a head start on disobeying the state. I even had a conversation with some convicted felons and told them that there were two types of felons, convicted and not convicted. And that's because some people get caught and some don't. Okay? You have to keep that in mind. Add to that the 50 million illegal aliens living here, which we don't know anything about. If you are a vicious criminal in your own land, you can come to the USA and commit crimes with impunity. All illegal aliens are, by definition, criminals because it is a crime to illegally enter the United States. Some may be otherwise decent people, but the government doesn't know anything about them, so you are unlikely to know either. The 12 million green card holders are vetted, as are 20 million naturalized citizens. But the unknowns are almost triple the knowns. In addition, there are 44 million refugees living in the USA, and most of them we know nothing about. Let me give you a different narrative than the media gives you. Their narrative is that the men falling off the airplanes taking off from Kabul Airport were men seeking freedom. How would they know that? What about the criminal men who would face certain death under the Taliban, which does not tolerate criminals? At the refugee camps set up for Afghan refugees, they have gang-raped female military police guards. They will be staying here no matter what crimes they commit. Add to this all the people who will kill you just to take your stuff and survive that are people who are not criminals but just desperate. Okay. So that's the enemy you're facing. Okay, so let me say the friendly situation. Okay, there are only 950,000 law enforcement officers in the United States. Our total military is 2.2 million people, including the reserves and the National Guard. Just the number of criminals in gangs alone outnumber our military. They are armed, vicious, heartless, cruel, and actually enjoy hurting you.
Oh, yeah.
You need to change the way that you relate to the world because it's about to become the worst nightmare in human history.
Did you see the story?
There are two aspects of... Oh, go ahead.
Mitch, I'm sorry. Excuse the interruption.
Yes.
There was a story about a Mexican cartel member who killed one of his rivals and ate his heart. They do that.
Yeah, I saw that.
They do that in Africa.
No, you have to eat the heart in order to be initiated into the cartel.
Correct.
Okay. So
go ahead.
There's all kinds of, you know, usually you have to be beat down to be in a gang, or you have to go murder somebody to be in the gang. I mean, there's every gang has different rules.
Right.
Okay. So I tell people that there are two aspects to a gunfight. First, you have to stay alive, and second, you have to kill your opponent. What I'm saying here is born of experience. But it is an old concept. Mao Zedong wrote in 1937, the first law of war is to preserve ourselves and destroy the enemy. I quote Mao because his revolution was successful. A lot of people will quote revolutionary leaders that did not succeed. And I think it's important to pay attention to the ones who did succeed, okay? Marine Brigadier General Samuel Griffiths, who was a China hand that spoke fluent Mandarin and lived in China before World War II, and at the end of the war watched the communists take over, developed a template to figure out who was likely to win. What criminal gangs have an advantage in is the appeal of the program, taking from others what you need. That means that the gangs can expand rapidly. They have the reserve army of 19 million convicted felons, plus the unknown reserve army within the illegal immigrant and refugee populations. Many people who were previously not criminals may want to join criminal gangs for safety and food. Gangs have some quality of leadership simply because they are already organized, already have a hierarchy of leaders, and have a large cadre to train new members. We, the people, have none of that. The gangs have already have a quality of troops in that they have already been obeying orders and murdering people now. Law-abiding yeah. citizens do not have this. The gangs have some degree of military efficiency, while we don't. The gangs already have internal unity, and we don't. We probably have more and better equipment than the gangs, but the gangs will simply take it away from you. The gangs already have base areas of operations, which they can rapidly expand outwards. We have very few base areas. Those that do can handle the criminal enemy. I am talking about already established militias, but they number from 10 to 200 members. The federal government has actively suppressed and attacked these militias for half a century while assisting our enemy, the criminals, in every possible way. Neither side will have a sanctuary. Mexicans attempting to return home will find a closed border. They will have to suffer the hell that America will become. Their decision to come to the USA will end up being the worst decision of their lives. Okay, so under General Giffords' template, the criminals will win. Okay, so what must you do? Organize. There is protection in the herd. There is a quality to quantity. You must have a mindset that you will never quit or surrender. You are simply dead if you do. What you lack in everything else, you can make up for in viciousness and aggressiveness. Gaining and maintaining the initiative against your enemies so that you attack them before they attack you. Master your force and use your massive and unrelenting violence when you attack your enemy. They have right. bad habits that are weaknesses. They will party. An organized attack against them while they are partying gives you a great advantage. No more Mr. Nice Guy, people. You have to be more vicious and tenacious than your opponent.
It's true. It's true. Hold on, Mitch. We got to pause on that note.
Okay.
A very important note, too. Keep that in mind. We'll be right back with Mitchell Henderson after the... Okay, let's get right back to Mitchell Henderson's monologue tonight. Go ahead, Mitch.
Okay, so once again, you should mimic excess. Mao's revolutionary warfare was successful. His advice is simple and may apply, will apply, to a failed state scenario because he was operating in a failed state when he made these 10 military principles. So it's just something quick and easy I can put out there to people that if our country falls apart tomorrow or in the near future, you can use these. So these are his 10 military principles, and they're in order. 1, eliminate isolated and small pockets of enemy first before concentrating forces to fight the big enemy. This is the concept of attacking the enemy where they are weak. 2, capture small towns, villages, and minor cities first before capturing large urban areas. 3, eliminating and destroying the enemy's fighting capacity is the main aim. Do not focus on holding territory and urban centers. Destroying the enemy is the purpose of war. Concentrate forces to achieve an overwhelming advantage in numbers to achieve total decimation of the enemy. 5, only fight battles for which you are well prepared. 6, promote bravery, self-sacrifice, and the ability to bear and endure hardship. Something that I learned in the Army and they beat in my head, never quit, never quit. Okay. Mm-hmm. A war of movement is preferable to static warfare. Use mobility to decimate the enemy and at the same time take special attention to assaulting prepared positions to capture the enemy's vital grounds and urban centers. 8, when fighting to capture urban areas, first go for the weakly defended cities. Then, if conditions allow, go for defended cities, leaving the heavily fortified cities to last. And Got only it. Take those when all the necessary conditions to achieve victory are present. Whenever possible, capture enemy weapons and supplies and use them against the enemy. And 10, use the time between battles to rest and reorganize the forces. Okay? So there's some information for people that you may need in the future. Okay? So now I want to talk about the Russian invasion of the Ukraine. Okay. For the past week, I've pulled out all of the stops. I was not satisfied even with what the foreign press said, because I realized what they're saying, propaganda too. Ukraine says, oh, yeah, there's nothing to worry about. Russia says, oh, well, we're not going to do anything. America says, oh, they're going to do something evil right now, and we're going to make them do it, you know.
And we're going to make them do it. That's the home run.
They're going to do it whether they want to or not. We're pushing, we're backing Russia into a corner. We're poking the bear, and we're going to get bit, okay? So I wasn't satisfied with the press. I spent hours on Russian broadcast news listening to Putin and Lavrov. I think I told you yesterday I spent the whole day just listening to them speak, okay?
Yes.
And they were talking to the Russian people to get them ready for war. Right. I contacted U.S. military intelligence sources and sources at the Strategic Command. I referred to Jane's Defense Weekly, which is the best intelligence you can get from open sources.
Uh-huh.
I contacted a Russian journalist who has great relations with the Russian military to get her to ask questions. We are so close that I wanted to refine estimates, okay? Of course, only Putin knows when he will invade. This is kept secret even from the troops. The guys on the front line don't even know this, when it will be, okay? So first, where did the U.S. and U.K. intelligence agencies get the date of February 15th? Because February 15th is the peak freeze date to go in on the freeze. That's
okay.
That's their only source of information about when the attack was going to be. Was they figured it would be on peak freeze date. But Putin said a week ago that they have had a very mild winter. Today, the low this morning was 26 degrees Fahrenheit. This afternoon, it was 42 degrees and partly cloudy. For the next 6 days, it will not drop below 32 degrees on any night. So no freeze at all.
And it's supposed to rain. It's supposed to rain, too.
Yes. The highs will be in the 40s all of those days. It goes up as high as 48 on those days. Okay, and this is in Kiev, of course. So there is a form of intelligence called technical intelligence. It paints a different story entirely. I have great access to this kind of information, and I apologize for not paying attention to it earlier. It does change the calculations, okay? So in 1942, it was cold in Ukraine and muddy to the maximum. The German Wehrmacht got bogged down, okay? The mud they had to deal with was just ungodly, okay? But now, this is, what, 60 years later, the Ukraine now has 127,000 miles of paved roads. The Soviets learned from the German experience to develop armor that would not get bogged down in the mud. Russian armor is only 50 to 75% the weight of NATO armor. Our warmongering press never mentions this as a factor. They have also
It's a huge factor.
Yes.
Wow.
They have also developed sensors that allow them to fight regardless of weather conditions.
Yeah.
When Putin started improving his military, he aimed to be able to fight in all terrains, in all weather. It, in fact, does not matter when they attack. It does not matter when they are attacked. They are ready at all times. They prefer to fight at the worst time because their opponents do not have the same flexibility that they have. Okay, so just because it's a bad day doesn't mean they won't attack. They certainly would attack on a bad day because it's a bad day for the enemy and not as bad for them as it is for the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it is essential that China go to war at the same time as Russia. Putin promised Chairman Xi that he would not attack before February 20th. China knows success in Taiwan can only be assured if there is war in Europe. Chairman Xi cannot fail or he will lose face, and not only will that mean the loss of his personal power, but maybe even the loss of the Communist Party power. During the opening ceremony, and these ceremonies are always, you should always watch these ceremonies. We used to do this to the Soviet Union all the time because you can gain a lot of information from them. So during the opening ceremony for the Olympics, it is normal for all of the Communist Party officials to face the flag with the national anthem is played. but many officials stared straight ahead and did not face the flag. Is that a big deal? Yes, it is. If Chairman Xi held an election today, he would lose. If he pulled a George H.W. Bush and got popular after the, who got popular after the Gulf War, there was too much time between the Gulf War and Bush's reelection campaign. So timing is everything. In October 2020 is China's 20th Party Congress, where Chairman Xi has to be reelected. His only hope is to take Taiwan and for the nation to recover from that war. It will recover enough. Okay, it doesn't have to completely recover.
I got you.
He must perform, and he will not risk attack if there is any possibility of failure. If he and Putin go at the same time, he greatly reduces his chance of failure. So it is very important to Chairman Xi, and he impressed that upon Putin. Okay, so I don't think that, of course, Putin could achieve some surprise by attacking before the 20th. The Ukrainians believe he's going to attack on the 20th. Okay. So, but the thing is that Putin can attack anytime, but he has to attack before we can get a handle on things. Okay. And so is China. I mean, they cannot afford to, we are weak now and they know we are weak and they can't afford to give us time to straighten out. Okay. And they're looking at maybe in November, we get a Congress here that blocks Joe Biden's agendas. And you know, the Congress can vote for things that the president doesn't want.
Sure.
They can vote to improve the military, to stop all the CRT nonsense and the witch hunt against white soldiers and stuff. They, Congress can stop that. Okay, since we sent Ukraine Javelin missiles, that attack tanks from the top where the armor is weakest, the Russians are now fitting their tanks with an armor plate over the top of the turrets. Why bother if you do not intend to attack? Okay, and there's people on the ground watching them put that armor over their turrets. Okay, so that's not just—it's not our satellites. Even if our satellites saw it, they probably wouldn't tell us about it anyway. They don't tell us anything here. So on Monday the 14th, Putin was on TV for hours. This was meant for the Russian people. The first meeting was with the Russian military staff. In it, Putin explained that NATO will not compromise on anything, even on matters where they made promises. He said that the U.S. and the U.K. were hell-bent on creating a war in Ukraine. He had a public discussion with Foreign Minister Lavrov, basically going over Russia's peace and security proposals and the West's intransigence as if they did not want peace. The UK and USA want war, period. Lavrov agreed that the West now just wants to stall for time to get ready for themselves. Putin explained, and Putin said, well, we're not going to just talk forever. Okay. So Putin explained how American pigheadedness and woke perspective do not allow them to think about what they are doing nor the consequences of what they're doing. He said they were leading the world into a thermonuclear war. The West will do what they want regardless of the consequences. So the key discussion with Lavrov was to ensure that they had a response to a letter they sent out to individual OSCE, that's Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, by the Russian Foreign Ministry, asking pointedly if those nations are on a Russian side or an enemy of Russia. Okay. So he's trying to figure out, he's trying to get his enemies to identify themselves. Because this, when he goes to war, it's going to be total war. Okay. He already knows that. So there are 57 members in the OSCE. 10 are Russian allies already. 3 are NATO nations who have already made clear they will not fight Russia. That's Hungary, Bulgaria, and Croatia. 3 major NATO members have already made clear in public that they did not want war. That's Germany, France, and Italy. 7 are so small that a single nuke can destroy them completely. That's Andorra, Monaco, the Vatican, San Marino, Liechtenstein, Luxembourg, and Malta. One has no military at all. That's Iceland. They have nothing.
So NATO is essentially, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Yeah, NATO is their protection.
NATO's, no.
The U.S. has air bases and stuff there, Navy bases. They have no military of their own. Okay, so four are traditionally neutral and not NATO members. That's Austria, Bosnia, Ireland, and Switzerland. One is against Russia, but against the people's will. In Slovakia, they, when they decided to let American aircraft and soldiers move into Slovakia near the Ukraine border, the Slovakian people went out and protested it. They don't want them there, okay? They think Americans are trash people and they're going to have their, you know, their women will be raped and, you know, they have all these ethnic people and stuff. And the Slovaks don't care for that stuff, okay? So, so that is 29 nations that are opposed to war with Russia. A majority vote of no war with Russia. That's 29. That doesn't count Slovakia. So there's 28 that haven't answered. Okay, that he's waiting to see how many people he has to fight. You got to size up your enemy first. So why is Putin doing this? Because he wants to establish moral force for war. It is important. Okay, everything he's doing is to establish the moral force for war. He's putting this on the people who's responsible, the people who told him that NATO
Got
would
it.
Never expand not one mm-hmm. inch mm-hmm. east of
yep.
the Iron Curtain. Okay, they lied. Now they have to pay for the lie. Okay. We try
and
to
if they
do
don't, if they
insisting...
and Mitch, one quickie here.
Yeah.
And if they are sure. held accountable, and they don't pay for their lies, and they're utterly betraying, their behavior's been a betrayal. I don't care how you slice it. They're betraying the truth. They're betraying their own honor. They're betraying everything. Promises to Russia. Promises to Putin.
Look at our government. Who in our government has integrity? Who has morality?
Well, it's not our
Who
government.
Has honor, dignity.
We're being occupied. It's the government of occupation, as you know.
Right. Okay. I'll agree with that because it's not. This is not my country. Okay.
Yeah.
My country is for individual freedoms. Okay.
Yep.
So we tried to establish moral force by insisting on dialogue. It is clear that there's no such thing as dialogue with our overly dogmatic Marxist police state and its lackeys in the UK. Okay, so let me go over a few indicators that war is coming. Okay. Russia has pulled all diplomats out of Ukraine. Russia has said that Russians in the Donbass may join the Russian army. The Russian Congress actually passed that law. Ukraine was hit with a massive cyber attacks today. The defense ministry and banks were hit. But our press is saying that is the Russians did that in preparation for war.
Yeah.
Okay, to get ready to invade, you know, as a preparatory attack. But these attacks were denial of service attacks, means they can quickly recover. These, I'm telling you, were attacks by the United States of America as a provocation to provoke Ukraine.
Not
to
false flag.
Instill
yeah.
fear in Ukraine that Russia is getting ready to attack tomorrow. The nations opposing Russia have pulled their diplomats out of Russia, out of Ukraine. The USA has withdrawn the Florida National Guard from the Ukraine. Other allied nations have pulled their troops out also. The pedophile Marxist Chairman Biden went on TV today to tell the Americans that they must brace for hardships in the coming war. Just as Putin was addressing his people, they made the senile Biden idiot come out to address our people. He said it would be cause fuel shortages and drive up inflation and unemployment. So Russia is going to do to us what the pedophile Marxist Biden regime, in fact, has already done to us. Okay. He says that Russia will likely attack us with cyber attacks. Let's read between the lines. The National Security Agency will launch cyber attacks on Americans to blame on Russia, and the pedophile Marxist Chairman Biden will declare war on Russia. The pedophile Marxist Biden regime appoints an open drag queen transgender S&M freak to be our nuclear arms negotiator.
Can you believe that?
Russia would never sit down and talk with such a freak.
No.
I mean, I wouldn't talk to him about anything. I wouldn't allow him in the same room with me.
Nope.
You know? You think Russia's going to sit down and talk with that guy if you see pictures of him? I mean, Jesus. Who would take him seriously?
I have.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't take him seriously. I don't know any nation that'd take him seriously.
This is total mockery of morality, political competence of a nation that literally is founded upon something decent. It's a mockery of all of that and much more.
Well, he's showing that we are the epitome of indecency and immorality.
He is. Yeah.
Yes,
he named the guy. So.
Yeah. So Russia's not interested in arms control treaties because the West never keeps its word about anything. That is the exact source of the current problem, us not keeping our word. Finally, Chairman Biden said today, and I'm quoting him, the American people understand that defending democracy and liberty is never without cost. The United States is a police state without a democracy or more freedom, and the Ukraine is a fascist police state. We are not free countries, and we are not democracies. You know, it is an insult for him to be up there saying that the United States would fight for democracy.
Uh-huh.
Americans won't even fight for freedom and liberty in our own country.
Yep.
Why would we go to some other country to fight for it, especially a country that is not a democracy and is and the people don't have liberty? You know, I mean, Zelensky is a dictator. He. There's only one press left in the Ukraine, his press, Ukrinform. And that's it. There is no other voice to be heard. He jails people for disagreeing with him. Okay. So, you know, it's like, what is this defending democracy shit? They're not a democracy in any sense of the word. You know, the United States is a police state without democracy and freedom, and neither is the Ukraine. So,
The last time Ukraine had a pretense of democracy was before Vicky Noodleman landed there with her satchel full of $5 billion to overthrow the government. Way back in the day.
Right. This is, I don't know where this Russophobia comes from, this hatred of Russia.
It's all created in the controlled media. It's fraud.
I explained in a program before the history of it, that Russia was set up under the Clintons to be a lackey of the American Democratic Party, okay? And Putin broke away from that. You know, you have to remember, it's the United States of America that put Putin into power. We put him there, okay? But he won't obey us. And that's what this is all about, is that Putin does not obey the dictates of the Democratic Party of the United States. That is the bottom line of what the Democratic Party's beef is with them.
Yep.
What I find disgusting is how many Democratic senators and congressmen are just, you know, being jingoistic and beating the war drum along with the Democrats. I mean, what are they in? Are they all insane?
We should pay no attention to our alleged government. It's just an obscenity.
Yeah. They don't represent us or anything.
No.
They don't even want to hear from us, actually. Hey, I listened to, and I had many friends that listened to Russell Bentley last night.
Uh-huh.
And they thought it was just captivating. They love the fact that you have got somebody there on the front line that can report about what's going on.
Russell's terrific.
That.
That's great. Yeah.
Well,
it's what journalism is supposed to be. I've known Russell for about 8 years now, and we covered the last attempt to overthrow the rebellious East with Russell fighting right on the front lines. We had him on a lot, and I'm very grateful to him for doing it again. And he will, he cares about this audience. He will be here. He will be here. So thank you for that.
No, you're very welcome. Thank you for giving me a chance to dig in and voice and what I find out about things and stuff.
Well, you have a worldwide following that understands and appreciates very much your ability to discern and to deconstruct these myths and lies that are being constantly thrown in our faces. It's disgusting, as you said earlier. Totally. All right, Mitch, thank you for that. And
we will
talk soon. Russell is standing by. If anything should happen at all, he'll be right back on the program. So we're waiting.
Okay.
Like you.
Well, I have a feeling that I'll be talking to you next Tuesday.
So. I think so. All right. You be well. Take care, Mitch.
Okay. You too. Bye-bye.
Right. Mitchell Henderson. All right. We'll be right back with hour number three, going down to that forlorn country of Australia, and David Oates with some, he's got a ton of hot reverse speech coming up next.